Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Adam Vingan, Nick Keyser here with you on this Tuesday morning. And we welcome in our friend Caroline Fenton to the program, host of Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace. Caroline, how are we doing? What's going on?
Good morning. It's been a minute, and that is totally and completely my fault, but I'm happy to be back.
We blame you. We're very mad at you.
I know. I'm
very
sorry.
Upset.
This is just the beginning of my apology and me showing to you,
yes.
Not just saying I'm sorry, showing to you I'm sorry, and showing up here at 7 a.m.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Now, I will say, before we get rolling on some of the stuff we want to get to, you began the show yesterday with a little bit of an announcement. For those who may have missed it, fill us in on as much as you can on what's going on with you right now.
Yes. So this is my final week at the station. I was given a really wonderful opportunity being able to do some dream work that I just simply could not pass up. So I'm moving on to a different opportunity, which I'm very excited about, but also very sad about. It's mixed emotions leaving the station and trying something new. So yes, this is my final week at the station, but I'll still be in Nashville. I'll still be filling in on the station. I'll still be hosting Jared versus Joe. So I'm not going too far. You'll still be able to hear me. But in terms of what's next, I'll be able to share that very, very soon. So I cannot wait to share that with everybody. But now, just grateful for everything that the station and that you and Joe and everyone has given me over the last 3 years.
Well, we are very grateful for you as well. You've done an outstanding job, and we're very excited for you moving forward here. So just wanted to give you the opportunity to throw that out there as for those who may have missed it yesterday. But again, we'll have more information on that here in the coming days here. But appreciate everything you've done, Caroline. On that front, we were just talking about the Predators offseason, and you know, a potential trade piece that we brought up was Luke Evangelista. Like, if the right deal came, would you be willing to move Luke Evangelista if you're Barry Trotz? He's 22. Like, you don't want to get older. It's already one of the oldest teams in the league when you just look at the roster. But if the right deal came along, say it was Marty Natchez and Carolina wanted Evangelista as part of the package, would that be something you're willing to do if you're Barry Trotz? Would that be a non-starter based on his production, his age, what you project him to be? How do you view the Evangelista part of this?
Yeah, I would be hesitant, but I would have to ask myself, okay, what am I getting in return? Because the last thing that I want to see the Predators do is mortgage the future for the right now. Because frankly, right now, this is not a cup contending team. And I do not think that it's a Marty Natchez away from being a cup contender. Now, I don't think that you're a Luke Evangelista away from being a cup contender. But what I think is so encouraging about this team is the young and encouraging pieces, is the fact that the Predators have never drafted and developed that elite premier scorer. Can Luke Evangelista be that? I don't know. Like, is he the next Austin Matthews? I don't think so. But can he be really freaking good in this league? I think that he can be, because he's 22 and he's already showed us, you know, what he could potentially be in this league. So I would be incredibly hesitant, especially if it's for like a Marty Natchez kind of player that, you know, he's good. He's not great. Now, if it's a Mitch Marner kind of situation, then I might be a little bit more willing to listen in on it, since you're getting a more proven commodity in return. I would be hesitant just because I'm encouraged about this young core, and I want to see what these young guys can eventually develop into. And also, who fits into Andrew Burnett's system? If Andrew Burnett looks at it and says, hey, look, Luke Evangelista just doesn't quite fit the bill, then okay, maybe I'm more willing to move on from a guy like that versus a guy that Andrew Burnett looks at and says, okay, 5 to 7 years from now, like, that's going to be my go-to guy. I think that the system is an incredibly important part of this as well.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. On the Titans front, Caroline, you know, OTAs, minicamp, that part of the year wrapping up or right around the corner from training camp. And a lot of this season, as we know, is going to come down to Will Levis. How good is Will Levis? What sort of steps does Will Levis take? What do you make of what you've seen, what you've heard about Will Levis this offseason, and where he is, your confidence level in him heading into year two?
Well, he threw the ball in the lake.
That's what I heard.
So it still just tickles me pink. Just that mental image that I have of Will Levis just launching an absolute cannon into the Cumberland River.
Hitting a fish.
You know, the, what did the fish do to you, Will? No, but all jokes aside, all of the reports this offseason so far, OTAs and minicamp, doesn't sound like it's been very good for Will Levis. But I will ask everyone this. Did anyone expect it to be great for Will Levis throughout the first few practices and first few weeks and months of the Brian Callahan offense of new pass catchers, learning a new system, learning a new coaching staff, a new coaching staff learning him, a trial and error period that I'd much rather Brian Callahan figure out what Will Levis can do, and maybe even more importantly, what Will Levis can't do on June 11th versus October 14th. So I think right now they're just in a trial and error period, and I can live with that. Like, I can live with Will Levis going 3 for 10 in a 7-on-7 period in mandatory minicamp. Now, I think the important thing to look at, as we got OTAs today and throughout training camp in late July and August, is how are things coming along? How is Will Levis starting to click with this offense? How is Will Levis starting to build that chemistry with a Tyler Boyd, with a Calvin Ridley's, with some of the new pass catchers in this offense? I don't think it's fair of any of us to expect Will Levis week one against the Chicago Bears to look like Patrick Mahomes. I don't think Will Levis is ever going to look like Patrick Mahomes. This is what Will Levis's fourth offense in 4 years,
Yeah.
two at Kentucky, last year with the Titans, and then obviously this year with Brian Callahan. There's been a lot of change. I do think that we're going to start have to see this year some progress being made for Will Levis. Like, you can't be making some of the dumb throws, the eff it YOLO throws that put the ball in harm's way. He can't be doing dumb bleep that hurts the team. He can't be going headfirst into a linebacker and just, bulldozing a defender. Can't do that when you're a franchise quarterback. So, are you seeing growth? Are you seeing development? You're not going to see Will Levis be an absolute elite quarterback in the first few weeks, maybe not even at this point this season. I think the important thing for me with Will Levis is, do you have confidence moving forward in what he is? Maybe that's a franchise quarterback, and maybe that's a backup. And if that's the case, then at least you know and you can move on and you can start that path to finding your quarterback of the future. But I think that this year, throughout 17, 18 weeks, throughout training camp, it's about the confidence in Will Levis, Brian Callahan learning Will Levis, and Will Levis learning his role.
Caroline, when you have spent as much time as you have around Jared, your internal gauge for concern gets thrown out of whack.
Right?
Yes. Yeah.
Correct.
Thank you,
Right.
Nick. Yeah.
Yes. So if Tavondre Sweat does not practice in the final mini camp practice, and we don't potentially see him until a training camp, is your internal concernometer off the charts? Or are you taking a more relax, not relax, but a more, what's the word I'm looking for here?
Calm.
Calm. Yeah. Are you taking a calmer approach to the Tavondre Sweat situation if you don't see him on the field today or whenever the last practice is?
My internal concernometer will not be off the charts. Like, I'm picturing that movie Inside Out, where the little, the little
Great
anger
movie.
emotion just like gets on fire. It's a great movie. That's not going to be me. I'm not going to be absolutely irate, freaking out, because if he's hurt, he's hurt. And I don't need to see him on the field just to see him on the field just to prove that he's there. You know what I mean? But I will be concerned. Because Brian Callahan said, what, two, three, maybe even a 3 weeks ago, maybe even a month ago, that what Tavondre Sweat is dealing with is minor. And look, if it's minor, then a month later, 3 weeks later, he should be able to be finding his way back on the field. Here's my thing with Tavondre Sweat. Look, if he's hurt, he's hurt. I don't force it, don't push it. But this was our concern on draft night. This was all of our concerns with drafting Tavondre Sweat, the 38th overall pick, a guy that was in fact overweight, a guy that did have character concerns. These are all of the concerns on draft night coming to fruition. It's like, hey, started dating this guy with a couple of red flags, and no, he hasn't cheated on me, but he follows an awful lot of Instagram models on Instagram. So it's just kind of confirming some concerns. Training camp is really when the concernometer will start to get off the charts. Today, I will be, looking for reports, because obviously we can't be out there at practice when our show shows in the middle of practice, I'll be looking for reports to see if Tavondre Sweat is out there. And honestly, we've talked a lot about Tavondre Sweat not being out there. Nicholas Petit-Frere not being out there is also a big concern of mine. If he is, in fact, going to be the starting right tackle for this team, he's going to have to start to get on the field and get some work in, because Nicholas Petit-Frere largely has not been available, whether if it was his fault or not. Gambling or injuries, you know, he needs to get out there if he's going to be the starting right tackle for this offensive line.
Yep, no question about it. Caroline, great stuff as always. Again, we're very proud of you. Thanks so much for taking time with us this morning, and we'll be listening at 11 o'clock.
Y'all are the best. Thanks, Rob.
Yep, absolutely. Caroline Fenton, our guest here on Robbie and Rex. So we'll react to what Caroline had to say, take more of your thoughts on the Titans, your confidence level in Will Levis heading into year two. Getting more into that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Tune in to 94.9 The Fan today as the Nashville Sounds take on the Gwinnett Stripers on the road. Pregame at 5:50, first pitch 6:05. Coverage available on the 94.9 The Fan app and at 94.9thefan.com. Sounds baseball presented by Twin Peaks, Family Leisure, and Five Points Roofing and Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. Sounds back in action today taking on Gwinnett. Make sure you're tuning in for that at 6:05 with first pitch. Thanks to Caroline Fenton for being with us in the last segment. Titans back on the field later today. And then after that, it's pretty much training camp is the next thing that's on the docket for the Tennessee Titans. Adam, I'll ask you the same question I asked her. Obviously, like, so much of this season is going to be about Will Levis. And yes, it's about the record and it's about the team and Brian Callahan's first season. And can you take some steps forward with the additions they've made in the offseason? All those things are important. But the most important part about this season is the development of Will Levis and more of an answer at the end of the year as to whether or not he's going to be your long-term answer at quarterback. When you factor in everything around him right now, the coaching change after the first season, the additions that have been made this offseason by Rand Carthon, specifically in free agency on the offensive side of the ball, how do you look at Will Levis heading into year two? What's your confidence level in Will Levis heading into what's going to be a crucial year, not only for him, but really for this franchise, as you try to map out what it's going to be for the Titans as they move forward here?
He's certainly set up for success because, as you mentioned, the Titans paid a premium to, you know, give him more pass-catching weapons. We know they added Calvin Ridley and Tyler Boyd. Tony Pollard can catch the ball out of the backfield. We should see an increased role for Tajay Spears, who can also catch the ball out of the backfield, something that Derrick Henry couldn't really do. He did it at times, but it wasn't his specialty.
Still really wish we missed out on if the Baltimore Ravens run a wheel route with Derrick Henry this year and he goes up and high points the ball, I'm going to be really upset, because I was calling for that for 5 years for the Titans.
Good thrower though.
Quarterback rating's outstanding.
Yeah, right. I remember the one that he had against the Colts that just missed with DeAndre Hopkins going out of bounds. But anyway, you know, Brian Callahan, an offensive-minded coach versus, of course, Mike Vrabel, who was not an offensive-minded coach. There's a lot to like about what the Titans have put around Will Levis. Of course, there are the obvious concerns about the offensive line and, you know, will J.C. Latham help? Will Lloyd Cushenberry help? Will Bill Callahan help? You know, of course, that's really the focal point, is if Will Levis has enough time to make the kinds of throws that we have seen him make, you know, in his young NFL career and in his collegiate career. But, you know, I agree with what multiple people have said on this station, that I feel this season it feels like success will hinge on whether or not we find out if Will Levis is the type of quarterback they can build around.
Yeah.
If the Titans go 7-10, but Will Levis shows enough improvement, shows enough promise that you feel like you've got something there once he continues to grow, I mean, I would consider that a success. I don't think anyone believes this team is going to win a championship next season.
No.
No one believes they're going to win the division. I think I like what the Houston Texans have been doing. I expect them to be the overwhelming favorite to win the AFC South next season. So it really does come down to Will Levis. If he takes enough strides even if the Titans have a losing record or miss the playoffs, I think as a Titans fan, you can feel good about it if you see enough from Will Levis this season.
I agree. I think it also comes down to not even just like the tangible things that you see from him, too, but we've talked about this. There are going to be moments along the way where they need a big drive or they need to extend the lead in the fourth quarter. Can he do that? Like, I think it would be a mistake for Titans fans to look at it and say, well, if the Titans go 8-9 or better this year, then we feel good about Will Levis. If they're 7-10 or worse, we don't. Like, I think that would be
It's independent of the record.
It is. Now, having said that, I do think that if Will Levis takes a big step forward and is playing really well, that's going to pay off in the record. It has to, right? Yes. Like, if Will Levis takes a big step forward and is really good this year, then the Titans could be a playoff team. I mean, I believe that. I don't think that's outside of the realm of possibility at all. I mean, we see that in this league all the time. I mean, we saw it last year in Houston, right? They got good quarterback play. They changed some stuff up with their roster. They were aggressive with how they built their roster. They hired a new head coach, and they were in the playoffs, made it to the division round of the playoffs. It's not as simple as that every time. I'm just saying, like, if Will Levis comes in and plays really well, and this is a good fit immediately in the Brian Callahan offense, then it should pay off in the record. But I do think there are circumstances that you always have to be mindful of and evaluate when it comes to the quarterback position. And to me, that's what this year is about. You know, if they – let's say they made the playoffs and Will Levis got hurt halfway through the year and Mason Rudolph took them on some magical run, would it be fun? Sure. Like, playoffs are great. So there's nothing wrong with that. But to me, more so than making the playoffs, more so than winning the division – this year is about Levis. Like, if you walk away from this season and you are convinced that Will Levis is your quarterback of the future, then to me it's a successful year. Like, that's what this is about. And on the flip side, like, if you walk away from this season and you're really hesitant and you're like, I don't know, man. Like, it wasn't great. He did not take the steps forward that we expected him to take this year. Then I think we're probably having a different conversation next offseason. That is, all right, are you staying the course with Will Levis one more year? Are you looking at quarterbacks in the draft with Brian Callahan and allowing him to pick his own guy? Like, it's a pretty wide swing to me in terms of what this could be for Will Levis after this season. And I'm not saying it all comes down to this year, because I do think he would have to be pretty darn bad for them to not go with him next year. But I'm just saying the range of possibilities is pretty wide with Will Levis this year.
And if he struggles and the team struggles – and they're not committed to him, they're going to have a high draft pick most likely, and they can use it on the quarterback. So I'm not saying print your Shedeur Sanders Titans jerseys just yet.
Oh, boy.
Or your Carson Beck jerseys just yet. But, I mean, it is a big year for Will Levis. But I do think that he is set up for success. I really like the wide receiver group that he has. I mean, I know it's easy to draw parallels between the Titans and the Bengals.
Yeah.
Because of Brian Callahan, but you know, it was just like Joe Burrow. I mean, Joe Burrow is on another planet compared to Will Levis right now. But just like Joe Burrow was young and he had Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd, now Will Levis has Tyler Boyd as well as DeAndre Hopkins and Calvin Ridley. Like, it makes a huge difference to have three tested or highly. You know, I mean, Chase wasn't tested yet, but he was an incredible talent.
Incredible
talent. Like, having those safety valves. I mean, think about the pass catchers that the Titans had last year. You know, Chris Moore and Hopkins and
NWI.
Like, you know, good for them for getting playing time in the NFL, but much different story this year when it comes to the pass catching talent that Will Levis has at his disposal.
And I agree with everything you just said. Can they block?
Quinn Ewers, Titans quarterback? Which is the least onerous of those choices?
They could get in the Nico or Arch Manning discussion too, if you really wanted to.
Yeah, you got it. You know, after taking,
I want no part of Shedeur.
after taking
the,
Will
the
Levis.
Coach Prime stuff around him would be exhausting. Yes. I can't do it.
After taking Will Levis and upsetting Tennessee football fans for, you know, for taking a guy from Kentucky, you know, he might have to take the Tennessee quarterback.
Get Nico. Yeah. Yeah, get him in there. 615-737-1025, our phone number. More of your thoughts on the Titans. Got some thoughts to get to on our text line. We'll do that next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. We are broadcasting live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Robbie Stanley, Adam Benton, Nick Keyser here with you on this Tuesday morning. We got a Vengeance Vitriol rant coming up at 7:45.
Yeah.
Look forward to that. A nice Adam Vengeance rant.
I was sitting somewhere when something happened to me. When I knew I would be filling in this week, I said, this is going to make a really great rant. It may not be great, but it will be good to get off my chest.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. Coming up at 7:45, Alex Doherty from the Tennessean will join us at 8 o'clock. We'll get into some of the Predators offseason discussion that we had earlier in the show with Alex at 8 o'clock as well. So looking forward to all that. Right now, taking your thoughts, 615-737-1025. Our phone number, 615-737-1025. Got a texter that says, do you think the Titans should go ahead and sign DeAndre Hopkins to his extension, so at least going into 2025, if Levis works out, he's got the same weapons 2 years in a row to be able to grow with. What do you make of the Hopkins part of this? And if you're the Titans, should you take a gamble on Hopkins, go ahead and try to sign him to an extension, and that way he is in place for your quarterback if you're feeling good about that moving forward?
Maybe I'm thinking about this the wrong way. I mean, Hopkins had a good season last year, no doubt. But he was also, you know, the unquestioned alpha of the wide receiver group.
Yep.
Now, you know, Calvin Ridley does something, you know, Calvin Ridley brings something different to the table, as does Tyler Boyd. I'm wondering what his impact will be now that there are more mouths to feed in terms of pass catchers.
Yep.
What do you think about that?
Well, I you could view it a couple ways. Like last year, he had 75 catches for over 1,000 yards, and he was really the one threat that they had in terms of catching the ball. So you could view that and say, all right, it was an offense that couldn't protect the quarterback, that had no other weapons on the outside to speak of, that played in a system that does not throw the ball as much as we anticipate the Titans are going to throw the ball this year, and he still had 75 catches for over 1,000 yards and 7 touchdowns. So that could go up. Like if they're throwing the ball more and you've got more options and he's singled up more in coverage and you protect the quarterback more, you could say, well, that should lead to more opportunity and more production from DeAndre Hopkins. Now, you could also view it as, well, Calvin Ridley is going to get a lot of passes. Tyler Boyd is going to catch a lot of balls over the middle. You're hoping for, I think, better production than you got from the tight end position last year with a combination of Wiley and Chig. So I do think it's possible that Hopkins can be every bit as good as he was last year. And instead of 75 catches, you're talking 65. Instead of 1,000 yards, you're talking 820. And what does that do in terms of his next contract, how you view his season, all those things? Like, I think that's entirely possible. To me, though, like watching him play, and I felt this way last year too, it's beyond even the numbers. Like, the numbers were good, but I felt like DeAndre Hopkins played better than even the numbers indicated last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 75 catches, over 1,000 yards. But he's just reliable. That's what it is. Like if you're paying for him, you're paying for the reliability of him. And look, he's going to be 32. I think he just had a birthday a couple days ago. So he's 32, and he's going to be in a situation where his best days are behind him. Like DeAndre Hopkins is not going to be the same Hopkins that he was last part of his career with the Texans, first part with the Cardinals. I think we all get that. But if he can approach what he gave you last year on a consistent basis with the added production that you expect from Ridley and Boyd, then I think you'll take that. And I think that's worth considering going ahead and trying to lock up the year after that.
So there was a 60-target discrepancy between DeAndre Hopkins and the next closest player on the team.
Yeah.
Chig Okonkwo had 77 targets. So it was Hopkins with 137, Chig with 77. I wonder where that ranked in the NFL in terms of, you know, gap between first and second receivers, running backs in terms of, or tight ends, in terms of targets. It went 137 for Hopkins, 77 for Chig Okonkwo, 70 for Spears, 45 for Nick Westbrook-Ikhine.
Honestly, like, I'm kind of surprised Chig was that high. But
but you know, that I imagine that's going to be more evenly dispersed now with more mouths to feed, with more tested pass catchers. So I would agree. I mean, Hopkins, I thought was really good last year. I thought the numbers were solid. I would agree with you that I felt like, you know, I mentioned the trick play that the Titans ran against the Colts. I think it was the game in Indianapolis where Henry had Hopkins over the top and Hopkins got one foot in bounds.
Yeah.
Like, I felt like there were a lot of missed opportunities for Hopkins that were no fault of his own, that he could have had even better numbers had, you know, he stayed in bounds or, you know, the ball was placed in a different play, you know, a different area. But yeah, I mean, I don't know if you need to re-sign Hopkins right now. I feel like that's something you can explore during the season. I feel like he certainly acquitted himself well last year. I just want to see how it looks with all of these other guys in there first before I make a commitment.
Got a texter that says, after this year, I'd rather have Ridley and Boyd on the team for Levis as long as they all click together. You know, Ridley, we know, is going to be there. Boyd's playing for next to nothing right now. I mean, when they signed him to his deal, I was like, wow, they got Tyler Boyd that cheap. So, I mean, this is kind of a, I don't want to say prove it deal, because at his age, I don't know how much it's going to get better in terms of his options out there, but I am really interested to see what he looks like in this offense with Will Levis, because to what they signed him for, I mean, he could end up being an incredible bargain for the Titans. So we'll see what that part of it looks like. I got somebody wondering, if Levis plays all 17 games, what do you think his season stats will be? You know, I don't know. That's an interesting question, because 4,000 yards used to be a big deal in the NFL. And now, not that it's not a big deal, but it's way more common now. Like, 4,000 yards is a more reachable number than it used to be. So could he get there? Like, could Will Levis get to 4,000 yards if things go really well? Could he get to 25 touchdowns this year? Could he be in the conversation when you start talking about, you know, touchdown interception ratio? Could he be 24 touchdowns, 25 touchdowns, 7-8 picks? Like, that to me is going to be interesting to see with the weapons that he's got. If you can get some level of blocking, can Will Levis put up the type of numbers that you want to see from the quarterback position?
Let's use your guy, Jordan Love,
yeah,
as a barometer. Jordan Love last season, 4,159 yards, 32 touchdowns, 11 interceptions.
Yeah.
If Will Levis plays all 17 games, do you think Jordan Love's numbers last year are attainable? Or do you think?
I think if I'm a Titans fan and you told me right now that's what it was going to be, I'd sign up for it today.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to be that. But, like, let's say it's 4,000 yards. Let's use, like, 4,000 yards, 25 touchdowns, 10 interceptions.
I mean, I'd probably sign up for that.
Yeah.
Like, that's...
That was a 90, by the way, that was a 96.1 rating,
yeah,
for Love last regular season.
Yeah. Like, Levis, I think if you're looking at it realistically, there's going to be some growing. I mean, he's played 9 games. There's going to be some bad outings from him this year.
And Love entering last season had played 10 games,
yeah,
in the regular season.
Yeah.
But he had been in the league longer, obviously.
He'd been in the league longer, and look, it's just a different situation. They've got, in Green Bay, a pretty good offensive line.
Yes.
And they've got a coach that's been there for a while. Like, so it's a different
situation.
It's
not a perfect comparison by
But it is, like, it's very similar in terms of just experience. And look, I think, you know, Jordan Love's got a huge arm. You know, Levis has got a huge, there are some similarities there when it comes to just skill set that they bring to the table. But, like, if I'm the Titans, I'm not saying you don't care about the stats, because I think sometimes we've said that around here as Titans observers and Titans fans, because the stats have never really added up to some of the other players you've seen around the league. I think stats are important. Like, I think stats tell part of the story. But again, it's more complicated than just, well, if Will Levis has 3,800 yards, he's had a good year, and if he doesn't, he hasn't. But I do think, again, if things are going well, a lot of times the stats are kind of the byproduct of that. And if he can stay healthy all 17 games and you tell me that there's some level of blocking for him, then yeah, I think he can have a pretty good year. What the most important traditional stat for me this year, beyond the yards and touchdowns, what do the interceptions look like? Like, can he take care of the football? Because that's still, to me, a big question for him moving forward here as to
Don't make me angry.
Sometimes you have to tell someone to pound sand.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
This is the Rob Rant.
Where you can feel pretty good about
on Robbie and Rex Road.
I still wonder about protecting the football and what that's going to look like. We'll have Vingan's Vitriol coming up next. Adam Vingan's Rant of the Day. Alex Doherty at 8 o'clock. I'm talking all things Nashville Predators and the Predators offseason coming up. All that ahead. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road.
It is that time of the day, normally for the Rob Rant or the Rex Rant, but Adam Vingan stepping into the podium today
for his rant of the day. A little Simpsons touch to go along with Vingan. Nicely done, Keezer.
Yes. Always good to hear that. All right.
Keezer with no thoughts.
No.
I have to make some more because that's the only one I have for Adam.
Okay. All right.
I'll give you some clips to choose from.
That'd be great.
that I could get lost in a wormhole.
So this could take a while.
I do quite often, so yeah. Welcome to the club.
All right. So first, I would just like to preface this by saying I love all of our medical professionals out there.
Well, that's good.
Yes. My wife, I would consider a medical professional. She's a social worker who works at Vanderbilt Children's Hospital, does great work. I had a doctor's appointment last Thursday. It was at 9:30 a.m., but it was recommended. I don't know if this is I think this is normal practice. My appointment was at 9:30, but it said, please arrive 15 minutes before your scheduled appointment time.
Yeah.
So that means 9:15. I left my home, I would say around 8:50. I arrived at the doctor's office around 9:10. I had to deal with, you know, a little rush hour traffic. No, I didn't have to go too far. But I check in right around 9:15. For my 9:30 doctor's appointment.
Yep.
Guess what time I got called back to the office?
I guess something that begins with a 10.
Correct. My name was called at 10:07.
So 37 minutes.
Plus 15.
Plus 15.
52.
Yeah.
So they asked me to arrive at 9:15 for a 9:30 appointment. And they do not call me back until 10:07.
Yeah.
It's absurd. Like, it's and when you get there, right? So it was an eye appointment. So I got called back into the office and they do the intake, right? You know, they check your vision. I had some scans done. So you don't see the, and then you have to wait for the doctor, the person you're actually there to see, to come see you. And that part isn't that long. So I don't think I left the office until close to 11. But just this idea of please arrive 15 minutes before your scheduled time and then have me sit there for nearly an hour before calling me back. I feel like one time I had a doctor's appointment and they were like, yeah, we're probably going to be running a little behind. Like, they give you that on the front end. So if you want to arrive at, like, I think like at 9:45 for your 10 o'clock appointment or something, or like whatever, that's fine.
Yeah.
But don't ask me to arrive 15 minutes before my scheduled appointment and then have me sit in the waiting room for nearly an hour.
Couple things on this. So number one, what really bothers me about that is that if I showed up 30 to 45 minutes late for the appointment, there's no way they'd see me and they would charge me for it. So you're sitting here, you would charge me for being as late as you are, but you're without fail. I don't know that I've ever gone into a doctor's appointment and been seen at the time that I was supposed to have been seen. Now, I've taken a different approach to that now, which I would advise most people to take. And it has worked for me to some degree. Usually, when I would show up when they asked me to, I would have similar experiences. Like, I would be in there 30, 45 minutes past time where my appointment was supposed to be when they actually called me back. So I started showing up and checking in, like, 45 minutes early. I'm not sitting there like waiting anymore, like we're waiting any less time, but at least I'm out of there. Like, I'm out of there if I have stuff to do after. Like, I usually, if I show up, let's say I had a 9:30 appointment, like I'd show up at like 8:45 and be like, hey, I'm here for my 9:30 appointment. And sometimes there have been a couple times where I've gotten in there at least a little bit early, right around where I was supposed to get in. So I've gone the opposite way. I've shown up obnoxiously early to some of these scheduled doctor's appointments, which I think they don't like. But I do it anyway.
And I understand that when you're working in a doctor's office, there's a lot going on.
Of course,
there are emergencies that could pop up, and that could change things. But in my mind, I'm like, I don't know what the first appointment of the day was. Like, what time they take an appointment, right? 9:30 is pretty early.
It's pretty early.
Pretty early. It's like, how can you be behind so much already?
Yeah. Like, what happened at 8:30?
Right. But to ask me to arrive at 9:15 and have me wait until 10:07.
That's pretty ridiculous.
It's absurd.
Yeah.
It's absurd. And now, to their credit, they were apologetic, and I accepted the apology. I didn't make a big deal about it then, but it still pissed me off that I'm sitting there. It's like, I got here at 9:15. Yeah. My appointment, I did the one thing that I don't like to do, which is like go to the front desk and be like, can you give me an idea of when I'm going to be called back there?
Yeah.
I don't like being that.
Any clue when
I don't like being
today?
That guy because I don't want to put the people at the front desk on the spot, because it's not their problem. But it's just like, did I not check in correctly? Did they not know that I'm here? And they're like, no, we you're checked in. You should be calling you back soon. But it's just like an hour. Like, people, like, fortunately, I didn't have anything else like major scheduled for that day. Yeah. But sometimes people do have things scheduled, like, and they can't wait. And they can't wait nearly an hour. So it was very annoying.
Yeah.
It was very annoying.
John on the text line says, took my now 5-month-old in for his 4-month checkup last month. Waited an hour before the doctor came in. Nurse was done. Make the appointment for when you could see me, not for when you want to waste my time. I think that's a great point. Dennis says, I had to take my son to the emergency room this weekend at 9:30 p.m. with a dislocated shoulder. He was in excruciating pain. They say x-ray and say, yep, it's dislocated, and then had to sit there for 2 hours before they came back in and popped it back in place. So just sitting there with a dislocated shoulder for 2 hours while they come back in.
Yeah, emergency rooms, I give a little grace there because it's the emergency room, but right, like if it's something as simple, quote unquote simple, as a dislocated shoulder, just pop that sucker back in there and let me go home.
Tell them to rub some dirt on it. Let's go.
But yes, just, I just wish the doctors would say, okay, your appointment's at 9:30, but realistically, we're not going to see you until closer to 10:15. Yeah. So if you want to come at 9:50, that's okay.
Yeah, instead of showing up at 9:15, show up at 10 o'clock, and we'll be ready to see you.
Right, exactly. So I sat there when I left the office at around 11 a.m. As I said, I knew I was going to be filling in this week. I was like, this is going to make for a really good rant on Tuesday.
I like it.
Yes, to the doctor's offices. Get it together, guys. Don't tell us to arrive early if you're not going to see us until – I mean, what? I wonder what the percentage is. Like, sometimes you take flights, right?
Yeah.
And so you go on an airplane, and sometimes if you click – like Delta does this. If you click on a certain flight, it will tell you, like, the percentages that it's, like, on time. Yeah. Like, the percentage of this route leaving on time with it, or, you know, delayed, whatever. I feel like you need that at the doctor's office. It's like, okay, this doctor's... Our appointment percentage is...
11%.
30%. Okay, I was like, okay, well, if this doctor is 30%, I'm gonna hedge and arrive when my appointment is supposed to be versus 15 minutes early. But yes, 52 minutes I waited for my appointment. It was a pain in the butt.
Coming up next, we'll be joined by Alex Doherty from the Tennessean. We'll get his thoughts on the Stanley Cup Final, get his thoughts on the Predators offseason, which is rapidly approaching right when the Stanley Cup Final is done. It's draft time. It's free agency time right around the corner. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.